This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. So, the man who said the election was rigged won, but Donald Trump lost the popular vote by more than 2 million votes and counting, and he says that's because millions of people voted illegally. But he's presented no evidence of that. Meanwhile, the campaign of Hillary Clinton, which conceded to Trump, has now joined a recount effort in three states initiated by Green Party candidate Jill Stein, though there's no evidence of any voter irregularity in those states. So welcome to the presidential transition. To help us make sense of what's going on and with some of the latest news, we're joined by Matt Visor, Deputy Washington Bureau Chief of the Boston Globe. He joins us from Washington. Hi, Matt. Good to have you.
Hey, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
So let me sort of pick up where that introduction left off. Yesterday, Trump responded on Twitter to Jill Stein's push for a recount in three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, by saying that he lost the popular vote because of voter fraud in three other states, New Hampshire, Virginia, and California. What is he actually claiming here? And is there any basis for these claims?
There is no basis for the claims, but what he is claiming is that there were 3 million illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants who voted in the election. And had they not voted or those votes had not counted, he believes he would have won. This appears to be coming out of sort of a blogosphere and sort of conservative media that don't have basis in fact for these claims. But that is where Trump is at least appears to be getting the information that he's trying to use to claim that he won both the popular vote and the Electoral College vote.
Matt, it seems like he's reviving claims that he made throughout the campaign that the system is rigged, but he won the election. So isn't he in a way lending credence to the recount effort put in motion by Jill Stein? I mean, why do this now, given that he won?
I mean, it continues sort of the baffling strategies of Donald Trump, where, you know, he does appear like a sore loser here when he actually won. You know, I mean, he won the election. There's not any dispute at this point over the Electoral College vote, and yet he is perpetuating these claims of a rigged election, but at the same time opposing moves to do recounts in some of these states. So it cognitively does not make much sense. It gets back to a little bit of Donald Trump's reactions to people when he feels like he's been affronted, which he feels like in this case he is, so he's firing back, but without making factual claims and sort of, you know, there's a question of what's the point, you know, at this stage. He should probably be focused more on establishing his cabinet and looking forward to January and taking over as president.
And I want to talk to you a little bit about that, but let me ask you a question or two about the recount effort pushed by Jill Stein, joined by the Hillary Clinton campaign. It could include three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, all states that Clinton expected to win, but that Trump won narrowly. What's the latest there?
So Michigan has just been called and certified for Donald Trump. That is the latest state, you know, probably the last state to be sort of finalized for Trump. It was too close to call earlier. There are efforts largely pushed through Jill Stein, the Green Party nominee, although Hillary Clinton's campaign has joined some of those efforts, largely in Wisconsin, to challenge some of those results and to establish a recount that will be happening in Wisconsin. Jill Stein is also moving to do the same in Pennsylvania, targeting some of those counties as well. There does not seem to be any indication that the results overall would change. All three of these states would have to have something dramatic happen through the recount, some big finding that nobody is suggesting is there at this stage in order for Hillary Clinton to, you know, become the president-elect. So that does not appear to be happening. But at the same time, there are challenges. There will be recounts in at least some of these cases.
So the votes were close in all three of those states, but they don't appear to be close enough to overturn the recount. So we asked, you know, why Donald Trump was making allegations of voter fraud in an election he won. Hillary Clinton has conceded this election. What's in it for her for joining this recount effort? I mean, is this sort of like a Hail Mary last sort of gasp of effort here, or what?
It is a little bit striking her joining these efforts. There is still some angst on the left, sort of a disbelief that Donald Trump was elected, that their candidate Hillary Clinton lost. And Hillary Clinton, I think, part of it is trying to they may drive up some of the popular vote that she's winning by. But even her campaign lawyer, Mark Elias, who is the one sort of active, at least in participating with Jill Stein, is downplaying any suggestion that she would be president. They're sort of in favor of making sure that the votes were counted properly, but they are saying that it won't change the ultimate outcome. So they still feel like there's a case to be made to counting the votes and making sure that they're done properly, even while not sort of changing the ultimate outcome of the election.
Now, Matt, as you suggested, all this happens as Donald Trump, we think, appears to be focusing on filling out his cabinet. And let me ask you about one possibility that seems particularly controversial: former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney for Secretary of State. They met last week. Even though Romney was among the first of those establishment Republicans to really repudiate Trump in a very harsh speech last March. But here's Trump spokeswoman Kellyanne Conway speaking to CNN over the weekend about resistance to Romney among many Trump loyalists. Here she is.
The backlash from the grassroots. I'm hearing from people who say, hey, my aunt, my parents died penniless, but I gave $216 to Donald Trump's campaign and I would feel betrayed. You have people saying, I thought we got rid of this type. We don't even know if Mitt Romney voted for Donald Trump.
So, Matt, what's going on here? Does it look like Mitt Romney is out, or what? How's this internal struggle taking shape within President-elect Trump's administration?
Yeah, like so many things about Donald Trump, it's hard to tell how much of this is real and how much of it is sort of for show. How much of Kellyanne Conway's comments are orchestrated, and how much is she sort of trying to influence the man that she works for from the outside, by sort of stirring up opposition to someone who she doesn't want to get the pick for Secretary of State. I think there is legitimate concern that Kellyanne Conway addresses with Mitt Romney as Secretary of State. It's hard to overstate the amount of animosity between Romney and Trump during the campaign. As you pointed out, Romney was one of the most outspoken of anybody about Donald Trump. So it is striking the fact that these two men are even having conversations about this. By all accounts, they met for 90 minutes last week in a very positive conversation that they both sort of left feeling good about one another. They're going to meet again tomorrow. So it does appear that Mitt Romney is still in the mix for Secretary of State, although the search is broadening at the same time. Donald Trump just now is meeting with David Petraeus as well, who's believed to be another candidate for Secretary of State. So there's a lot of intrigue and a lot of action sort of right now at Trump Tower for Trump to figure out who he's going to pick. And Mitt Romney still appears to be in the mix, although the opposition toward him is also fierce.
Now, I want to ask you, as someone who's written about Mitt Romney, the former governor here, I mean, as we both made reference to, he called Donald Trump back in March a fraud and a phony. I mean, what's your sort of analysis on why Mitt Romney would pursue this? I mean, obviously, being Secretary of State is a great honor, but given what he said about the president-elect, it makes one you wonder a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, how does Mitt Romney, in other words, justify to himself that it's worth serving a man who he has said and by all accounts believes is a fraud?
Exactly.
And a phony, and I think for Mitt Romney, he would justify it in a way that he feels like he can impact change from within more than he could from the outside, and maybe he believes that as Secretary of State, which is a very powerful position within the administration, he could impact things from within the administration. At the same time, he would be potentially waking up in the morning responding to tweets of the President Trump, and having to kind of disagree with the president. Mitt Romney's father, interestingly, for historical perspective, also served in the cabinet of Richard Nixon. And his father was sort of on the outs within that cabinet and eventually got so frustrated that he resigned. So, you know, Mitt Romney, you know, no doubt that's in his mind as well, of sort of serving somebody who you don't exactly agree with, but trying to make change from within that administration.
Matt, I want to ask you finally about this great piece you wrote in the Sunday Boston Globe about Steve Bannon, who Donald Trump appointed as chief White House counselor. Bannon ran Breitbart, the online news agency that has promoted nationalist and racist views. And you went back and looked at Bannon's years when he was a student at the Harvard Business School. What surprised you about interviewing those folks who knew a younger Steve Bannon?
Well, one of the things that was surprising to me was how many classmates don't recognize the Steve Bannon that they read about today. You know, that they knew a guy, you know, who was bright and, you know, did not espouse anti-Semitic views, racist views. You know, he was a different type of character at that period of his life. Some of them justify the things that they read now and the things that they see on Breitbart that, you know, Steve Bannon, they don't think believes those kind of things, but he has identified a marketplace, you know, in essence using those skills that he brought out of Harvard Business School to find areas in our society that do have those viewpoints that Steve Bannon is marketing toward that segment of our society, which is not exactly a rosy view of the situation, but it's one that you know, it to them feels more in line with the Steve Bannon that they knew, you know, who was not the same kind of anti-Semitic, a racist kind of guy that he's often portrayed as, at least in the news media.
Well, Matt, it was a fascinating piece. Thanks for bringing it to us. And listeners, by the way, you can find a link to Matt's piece on Steve Bannon at radioboston.org. And Matt Beiser, Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for the Boston Globe, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, Harvard's Muslim chaplain Imam Taymullah Abdar Rahman talks about growing up in Roxbury, performing in a successful R&B group, and his conversion to Islam. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.